On today's episode, I'll talk about flying cameras, about the requirements to fly them, and especially about what to keep in mind from the creative side when doing remote-controlled aerial videography and photography. This episode is brought to you by Udemy, the largest marketplace for online learning. Whether you're looking to learn something new or just sharpen your skills, Udemy has over 65,000 courses starting at just $11.99. Students around the world choose Udemy to discover new passions, expand their skills, and even change careers. Visit ude.my/topfloor or download the Udemy app to learn anytime, anywhere. That's ude.my/topfloor. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 824 for Thursday, May the 24th, 2018.
Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right, from the top floor.
Hey, hello and welcome. This is Chris Marquardt. You're listening to Tips from the Top Floor, the longest running photography show on the planet. Today about drone photography. Yep, drone photography. Before that, I'm just in the middle of getting prepared for a castle workshop that we're going to do over the weekend here in northern Germany with a bunch of people, a whole bunch of people in an old castle. There are some models, there's lighting technique. We'll talk about how to work with people in front of the camera. And the last couple of times we did those, it's around the Happy Shooting Workshop, the Happy Shooting Podcast, was just an amazing time. Great location. Yeah, it's an old castle. Old, as in old. And it's going to be an amazing weekend. But of course, before the weekend, I want to get this episode out to you. And it's about drone photography. Now, of course, first question at this point in the show would be, what qualifies you to talk about drone photography? Not too much, to be honest. Other than that, I have several, and I think it's mostly the photography part, the videography part. I have my shares of tiny indoor drones, like the Hubsan variety and others that fit in the palm of your hand. Before that, I played with RC helicopters, not too successfully, but well, at least I did. So drones are definitely in my area of interest, and especially the photography part and the videography part, because let's face it, drones are not really about flying, are they? They are about photography. For me, a drone is a flying camera platform. That's what they are. That's what I think they are. I think the overarching category would be UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. I think other terms are like quadcopters, if they have four rotors, or hexacopters, if they have six, or octocopters, and so on. But I'll put throughout this episode, I want to use the term drone here. Now, that term doesn't, just as a note, as a side note, doesn't imply autonomy. I mean, we've seen the Skydio R1 that is autonomous, but we're not talking about that here. Well, kind of, because there are now in modern drones, there are automatic modes and systems that give you at least some form of autonomy with some of the drones. Now, there are many drone makers out there. I already mentioned Skydio, there's Parrot, there's FreeFly. Let me see, even GoPro launched a drone, the Karma. And but there's one clear market leader at this point, and that is DJI. I think we can't get around drones without talking about DJI. I think, pretty much own the market at this point. And there are, of course, reasons for that. I mean, they innovate. They bring out new stuff all the time, even though they don't have a lot of serious competition. For what they do, what they offer, they are somewhat affordable. They're well-built. They're quite robust. Some of their models are incredibly compact. And for that reason, I mean, I've resisted long enough, resisted really long time to get one of their drones. But a few weeks ago, I got the Mavic Air, which is a fun toy to play with. Now, this episode is not sponsored by DJI. DJI is not paying me to say this. I'm just using them as an example. First of all, because I have one. And second, because, yeah, they are hard to ignore on the drone market. One thing I can say after having used this for a while now is that new drone pilots have it so easy. I just remember those little tiny indoor drones where you don't have stabilization. At least in most of them, you don't really have stabilization other than a gyro that helps it from flipping over or that keeps it from flipping over. But now the modern drones have GPS to stabilize them in the air. To keep them at the same spot. They have optical systems to keep them over the same spot on the ground and to help with takeoff and landing and even obstacle avoidance. Which means you, with these modern drones, you can now pretty much let go of the controls while the drone is doing something, and the drone will just stay where you put it until the battery runs out. It'll just hover at that spot. And that is incredibly helpful for new drone pilots. Also, I guess you probably won't really learn flying that well anymore because you don't have to. It's maybe, I don't know, maybe like driving a stick shift and then going to an automatic and you kind of forget how to run a stick shift. I don't know if that's a valid comparison. Let's see. Before we get into the cinematography and photography, let me just talk about a few other things that that are necessary to get started. For example, requirements. At least here in Germany, I can only talk about what's required here in Germany, but I guess that at least some places on our planet have similar requirements, or you should find a place to look them up. Insurance. If you want to fly a drone here in Germany, and I think we're talking 250 grams and higher, which they all are, the ones that we're talking about here, you will have to have insurance. Yeah, some liability insurance in case that thing falls out of the sky and damages something, or if you fly into something because you're not careful enough. So you have to have insurance. I think it's possible that in some cases the homeowner's insurance might include that, but you have to ask. There are also drone-specific insurances. Another thing here in Germany is you have to have a fireproof license plate on it with your name and your address. It's the minimum requirement. So there's now like there are businesses out there that sell you laser engraved aluminum stickers pretty much that you can put on your drone, and then you have the legal requirements covered. But of course there are also other requirements. We'll go into those a bit later. Let's talk about cameras and sensors. At least the first like serious type of flying camera was by DJI. The DJI Phantom is, I think, one of the early ones that really managed to get into the mass market. And they used to have GoPro cameras. So GoPro and DJI were like in a partnership for quite a while. And yeah, the flying camera platform, that's the killer app of the drone. That's what drones are. They are for, to carry cameras. And DJI, again, used to be GoPro only. You could buy bundles where the DJI came with a GoPro and a gimbal, so the GoPro would be stabilized. But then at one point, DJI kind of began making their own cameras. And initially, I was quite surprised. But then, yeah, those cameras are actually quite good. So now when you buy a DJI drone, it comes with a DJI camera, which I believe helped them a few things. Well, first of all, of course, maximize their profits. Also, lower weight, because they could make the cameras so it would be specifically made for the drone and didn't need the ruggedness and things that a GoPro has, by removing anything that's not necessary. Also means a better integration with the gimbal and the camera kind of combination there. They typically have small sensors, mostly for daylight. Now, there are, of course, bigger platforms by different manufacturers, also by DJI, that carry bigger cameras that have like a gimbal that you can put an APS-C camera into, or a bigger DSLR even, especially in the professional field. There are cameras that carry really heavy cameras. But here, I kind of want to talk about hobby drones. Even though for some, those drones are used in professional capacities and are a bit more than a hobby. The Mavic Air has a sensor of 2.3 of an inch, CMOS sensor, 12 megapixels. And that is plenty good for at least most of the daylight requirements. I'm not sure how they perform at night, but then it depends if you're allowed to fly at night anyway, depending on where you live. Image stabilization, another topic that's really interesting, because a drone moves, right? It tilts side by side and forwards and backwards and up and down, and it turns around its vertical axis. And I think initially most drones that had cameras used just digital stabilization, which is okay, but it's definitely not as good as using, as keeping the camera level, which means the camera has to be in what's called a gimbal, which has motors and counters the motion. And those have only become possible by miniaturization of the gyroscopes, which comes from the mobile phone industry. So pretty much the mobile phones are responsible for us having gimbals on this, on these flying platforms. And the cameras used to hang under the drone. I think many drones still have that. DJI Phantom is a good example, like right in the middle under the drone. But that had a problem as a result, because with extreme movements, when the drone was catching heavy gusts of wind and was moving sideways or back and forward, or if you were flying really fast, or if you were flying backwards or very fast forwards, you could see propellers in the frame, or maybe the landing gear in the shot. And many of the smaller drones, like the DJI Mavic Air, have now switched to putting the camera at the front of the drone, which results in less artifacts. Or some have retractable landing gear, like an electromechanical way to flip up the landing gear. There's an important difference between gimbals, and it's mostly between the two-axis and the three-axis gimbals, where the two-axis takes care of the tilt of the drone, like left and right and forward, backward. The three-axis gimbal will also take care of the drone rotation. And you can get away for many cinematic shots. You can get away with the two-axis gimbal, but the three-axis is just more stable. So, let's talk about cinematography and photography. You used to have to hire like a helicopter. Even an RC helicopter with a camera, that was the way to get aerial footage of something. And it was really only possible for people with deep pockets to do that. It was expensive to do that. And so it would be movie productions, these kind of things that would use these ways of acquiring aerial footage. And the same way that the digital photography has, especially the DSLRs, have come down in price and have enabled everyone pretty much to use professional-grade equipment that was previously only for the professionals with deep pockets, that same thing has happened in drone photography or in drone videography, because now you have the drone that can take that over, and for with a DJI Spark, maybe for about $500, you can get really good looking aerial shots, and everyone pretty much can do that now. We have replaced traditional shots with similar shots, but with an added Z-axis. Like, we have now a way to explore the third dimension, which is interesting because it gives us different kinds of viewpoints, stuff that you would in the past, maybe if you didn't hire an helicopter or an RC crew, you might have used a crane or something, and even those are prohibitively expensive for most people. The horizontal on the ground dolly shot that we all know, where the camera is put on rails for videography. Now you have 3D rails. Like, you can move from point A to point B in space with a camera, and that just changes things quite dramatically. You can do things like a circle shot, circle around an object. Used to be the camera being on circular rails around that subject. Now you have these virtual rails in the sky, and some cameras do a really good job in supporting you to do this. Another shot that it used to be very expensive to do was a reveal shot, where, again, was a dolly shot that is close up on a person or something, and then it pulls back and it reveals more of that scene and gives kind of a view of what that person sees. Yeah, many drones can do this now very easily. In general, you can have a stable type of motion along a track in space. Now, what's important when you do cinematography with a drone is most of the time it's the smoothness of the footage. I've seen a lot of new drone pilots just put their first Hello World example on the air somewhere on YouTube. And it's all jerky. It's all like, let me correct the gimbal angle. Let me rotate the drone left and right. And it's all in the video. And it just, I think it's a mistake. I think the best drone footage is smooth, doesn't have jerky motion in it. And there's a reason that smoothness is needed. I mean, of course, if you just want to show people, hey, I have a drone and I can take video, from above, that's fine. But the reason the smoothness is needed is if it's not, it breaks the fourth wall. The fourth wall being that virtual concept of you looking at something and that whatever is in that space doesn't notice you or doesn't acknowledge you. And one minute you love that image of with the flowing motion, and then you're jerked out of that by the jerky motion, and you instantly get aware of the fact that someone must have bumped the control sticks and there's a drone involved, which you kind of forget if you don't really, if you're not pointed towards it. Kind of kills the mood. So what I found myself when editing drone footage, and I've just uploaded a video that I'm going to link to in the show notes. What I found myself is being very, very selective about which of the shots I use and how I use them and how I add them to each other. And it's always the choice is always those parts of a shot. I mean, there will be jerkiness in the video that you record, but then don't use it. That's what I'm trying to say. And I opted for not using that to kind of take that whole drone aspect into the background. I'm not there to show off my drone. I'm there to do beautiful videography. That's at least my approach to things. Now, what's counter to that is that a drone might be hard to steer to get that smooth motion, especially if you want to do kind of special shots. Like, let's look at that circular shot of the drone circling around while pointing at something with a camera. That requires several motions in one. You have sideways motion and you have rotation, and you're trying to keep that gimbal pointed at the subject. And in traditional production, that would have taken at least two people, like one pilot and one camera / gimbal operator, maybe even a third person, maybe a spotter, who's someone who's not looking at the screen but watching the drone by looking at it, to let you know if you're about to fly into something sideways. Now, if you look at what DJI has done, they and others are getting better and better at making this easy for everyone. And that democratizes videography because they have automatic modes built in. And those are kind of semi-autonomous. They are like, they're starting to blur the line to an autonomous drone there. They have like what they call helix shot and a reveal shot and a dolly shot and some pre-programmed motion in there. And with the circular shot, I mean, it's now so easy. You point at something on the screen, you draw a box around it. Let's say you want to keep a person in the frame, you draw a box around them on your screen. By the way, the screen in case of the Mavic Air is your smartphone, and it comes with a remote control, but you slide your smartphone in there and then run their software. But yeah, you get to to choose that person on the screen and then tell the software if you want a counterclockwise or a clockwise motion and press go. And the camera starts recording and circles around that object that you selected and films it. And it's a fairly smooth motion if the wind is not too high. Of course, you still got to watch if the drone is flying into something, but now you don't have to watch for that framing of the shot because the system is taking care of that. So also with some directions, like the Mavic has distance sensors into three directions, which means forward, backward, and downward. It has like little cameras that keep an eye on things and help you avoid running into obstacles. There's none on the side, so for a sideways motion, you're still in charge of making sure nothing happens, or you're generally in charge, of course. But yeah, it's an interesting thing to do cinematography with these. It's also a new way, and it's an unusual way. At least it feels like it's a bit unusual not having that camera in my hand, but flying it with the help of a remote control. Now, that was cinematography. What a word. Cinematography. Let's talk about photography, still photography, for a minute. Because the camera, I mean, it does have auto exposure. It also has manual exposure. I think the camera is a fixed aperture, but you get to choose the ISO and the shutter speed. And there are, like, of course, regular photo modes in there. There's an HDR mode in there, which will do HDR computation for you, so you let it hover at a point and it takes several shots and then does the whole HDR processing for you. You can also tell it to keep those original shots, so you can do your own HDR. Shoots raw, which means you get unprocessed photography out of the drone. Can shoot series of photos, can do bracketing if you want to do stuff with that. You can do interval exposures, and it even includes a panorama mode where the drone will shoot like three shots, I think, side by side and or vertical or horizontal, and then stitch them for you. So it's really interesting the kind of things you can do with these things right now. Video shoots up to 4K at 30 frames per second. I think 2.7K up to 60 frames per second. And it has a relatively high video bitrate of up to 100 megabits per second, which is, I believe, the highest in a drone so far. And that helps to keep some of the detail crisp, the fine detail, because that was an issue with lower bitrates where the compression, I think it's H.264 compression, wasn't... well, it was crunching some of the detail, and the 100 megabit seems to do a good job. At least from what I can tell, seems to do a pretty good job. Means a bit of a larger SD, micro SD card in there, but they're not expensive anymore, so I don't think that really hurts. Now, before you get to fly a drone, there's of course some of the pesky stuff like regulations that you have to know about, and I won't go over regulations everywhere on the planet because I don't know the regulations everywhere. But first of all, of course, why do we need regulations? Because some seem kind of draconian, and I'm sure some are. But I kind of understand why they need to be there. And when I had that drone, my first impulse was to go out and shoot right away. But there were a few hoops to jump through. And yeah, why regulations? Well, a collision with an airplane could, I mean, worst case, kill hundreds of people. And in best case, it could cause just little damage to that airplane. But hey, if that's an Airbus, I don't think your insurance would pay that bill. So it's really, it's not without danger to fly one of these things. Or, I don't know, if you run your drone into the blades of a wind turbine. Hey, I've seen that on YouTube. People do stupid things. Or let's say you're flying a one-pound drone and that falls out of the sky. It could cause damage to things, to cars and buildings, or worst case, kill someone. That is not unheard of. So the regulations are often there for a good reason. And of course, let's not forget privacy. One fear that I've often heard about is the drone will look into my bedroom. But with today's sensors and quality, I think you'll notice if a drone is hovering outside your sleeping room. So these things are not silent. Drones are noticeable. But still, I mean, there is a concern by people. And by the way, drones do fall out of the sky. Those four propellers are needed, and most drones will fall to the ground if one of those motors fails. Or you might catch a propeller in a tree, or the propeller might have some damage and disassemble itself in the air. Or well, they rotate pretty fast, so there's quite some force at play. Or there might be an electrical failure. Maybe your last crash introduced a short circuit in a cable, or a cold solder joint, or stuff like that. So it's definitely a possibility. And there's plenty of reasons why a drone might crash, and that's why I'm not really against regulation. I might not be too happy about some of it. Let me just briefly go over the German regulations, because I think, at least from looking around, they're at least similar to some of the other countries that have official regulation. There are weight classes here. There's the under 250 grams class, which I think you can fly anywhere unless they have a camera, unless they transmit the camera signal via radio. Then in Germany, they fall under a different category. There's a 250 grams to 2 kilograms category, and then the 2 to 5 kilograms, and then 5 and above. I think drones go to maximum of 25 kilograms, which is quite hefty. But the hobby class, the 250 grams to 2 kilograms, I think that's most non-professional drones these days that do stuff like the DJIs do. Here in Germany, you must have line of sight to the drone flying. So the modes where you can like just fly for a couple of miles or more and film what's over there is not really allowed here. I'm kind of afraid to lose the drone anyway if I fly far away, so that doesn't bother me too much. You can't fly over people for obvious reasons. You can't fly over someone else's property unless they give you permission here in Germany. You have to be 100 meters from crowds, like a horizontal distance from crowds, or from autobahns, from government buildings, from power plants, and a lot more different things, more official kind of stuff. Of course, you cannot fly within airport zones. There's defined airport zones where you cannot fly, or if you're a bit further away from an airport, you can fly, but not at the maximum allowed altitude, which is 100 meters here in Germany. It's about 300 feet. What is 100 meter in feet, 328 feet. That's what you can do here in Germany legally. And unless you're in a specific zone that, again, limits that, or if you're in a specific zone like an RC airport, a model airplane airport, that's, I think, when you can fly higher. The drone needs to have your name and your address on that fire-resistant tag. And again, the standard here seems to be kind of a laser-engraved aluminum sticker. So that's what I put on my drone. And then the DJI app that you use for flying has no flight zones marked on the map. And the software will also tell you if you're trying to fly in one of those zones. I believe there's a way to override that, but I haven't tried that yet. But at least you're being warned. But in general, before you fly, you got to kind of know your stuff. If you mess up, claiming ignorance will probably not save you from trouble. Rather the opposite, I guess. So, yeah, don't go into this kind of thing unprepared. I think that's the most important thing. These drones do have emergency systems, mostly for loss of signal. Like, if you use the Mavic Air, they use Wi-Fi to communicate with the remote control. So Wi-Fi, I kind of know how far the Wi-Fi reaches here in my house. It's not too far. So what they have done is they have, I think, a special design in the antenna, and they use Wi-Fi frequencies, the 2.4 and the 5 gigahertz frequencies. And you can get, if you're outside of a radio zone, then you might get quite far, several miles in distance. Here where I live, we have an airport nearby. Actually, right where we are is the end of that zone. So I can fly here around the house and back in the fields where I, by the way, shot the video that I've put online. And there's quite a bit of radio interference here. So I think I get to 500-600 meters and that's it. Then the connection just drops. And you can see this. First, you lose the image transmission, and then it tells you, bah, can't talk to the drone anymore. And then the drone goes into an emergency mode, which is the return to home mode. And it's important to know how the drone behaves in an emergency. I think you have to study that a bit, because there are different obstacle avoidance modes for that. And in return to home, the drone will fly up to a predetermined height. I think it's 30 meters. And then it'll fly over to where it started from, which means it's using GPS for that. It does that in a straight line. And if you have not enabled the obstacle avoidance for that, then it might run into a high tree or a building if something's in the way. And then it'll hover over that spot where you started from and slowly descend and land, which is nice, but of course you have to keep a few things in mind. Well, first of all, yeah, enable those return to home obstacle avoidance things. Second of all, start your drone under a clear sky. Don't start from, let's say, an overhang or under a tree, because then the return to home will fly up and over that tree and then down into the tree. Also, before you start, make sure the drone has saved the home position, which is where it started from. So just a few things. They are quite automated, but you should know this kind of stuff. And I don't know, the Mavic Air, I'm not sure that it does anything but that home position. I believe that if you want to start a drone from a ship and land it again on that ship, I think you should have a drone that allows a follow the remote mode, so it follows you instead of trying to fly home where the ship was 10 minutes ago and then land in the water. So I'm not sure if the Mavic Air has that kind of a mode. I don't think it does. But I'm not planning to shoot from ships. Travel with a drone. Another interesting one. The Mavic Air is tiny. It has a start weight of under 500 grams, under a pound. And that's including the battery. And it has a folding design, so it's a pretty compact drone to carry around. You can toss it in a backpack. The controller itself is quite compact. You can tuck away those sticks, so it's easy to slide into pockets. And those were some of the reasons for me to go for that. It uses your smartphone as a display and as a controller. You can use it without the remote control, just through the Wi-Fi of your smartphone. But then you don't have the distance doesn't fly as high. I think it doesn't fly as far because the Wi-Fi antenna on your smartphone is probably not as strong as the Wi-Fi antenna that they use in the controller. For travel, of course, again, be aware of the different regulations in different countries. They can greatly vary. And again, ignorance will not save you from prosecution. Forbidden zones are usually there for a reason. I use a couple of apps to help me to fly, and that's DroneMate is one that has the regulation of different countries in it, so you can see if you're allowed to fly drones and how the current regulation is. This is not guaranteed information, though. When I looked up the German information, it was not complete, so I had to add a comment to fill in some information there. So I wouldn't completely rely on that. I'd probably go online, try to find the website of the according regulation authority and read what they have to say. Another one that I like is called UAV Forecast. And that's an app. I don't know if it's on Android. I use it here on the iPhone, which is kind of a, gives you the conditions for where you want to fly, like weather, the temperature, the wind strength and direction, visibility, how many GPS satellites you can expect, that kind of stuff. So the subscription is fairly steep, I think, but they have a free mode that gives you like a 24-hour forecast, which is plenty good for me. So I've recently started using that, and seems to do a good job. Now, last but not least, let's talk about accessories. Just a few, three different things pretty much. First of all, one thing that I think is essential is filters. Now, the cameras that come on these little drones usually have a fixed aperture. And the one thing that you want to control is the shutter speed. There's a good reason to control the shutter speed, and that is, from a videography point of view, you want the proper amount of motion blur in there. If it's too short, let's say you're shooting at 30 frames a second, but each frame is only exposed for a thousandth of a second because it's really bright in the sunlight, then that will look stuttery. It won't feel right. And in order to get the right motion blur, you got to have the right, what's called the shutter angle. This is pretty much the shutter speed of your camera. Now, with a fixed aperture camera, you can lower the ISO as much as you want, but it will still go to higher, to shorter shutter speeds in brighter light. And pretty much the only way to get those shutter speeds down to achieve the right amount of motion blur is by using an ND filter. So those are being sold on the market. They usually come in packs of three, an ND4, an ND8, an ND16, which will allow you to drop the shutter speed to something lower. Sometimes they come in combination with a polarizer. So you have an ND4 with a polarizer all in one package, and an ND8 and ND16. And that's what I got, and it works quite well. So it's definitely a thing to look into. There are different manufacturers. I went for the cheaper option by a company called Neewer, N-E-E-W-E-R. I think a pack of six, four NDs and four ND polarizer combinations was maybe $25. They come in more expensive, but I found the quality to be decent, at least decent enough for what I need them for. Of course, other accessories, well, batteries. More is better if you want to fly. Simple as that. I do consider my drone more of a hobby, so I do not really have a business case for it, other than I want one. So I don't worry too much about flight duration. I'm not turning into a daily vlogger now because I have a drone. But I have two batteries, and each keeps the drone in the air for 15 to 18 minutes. So 30 minutes of flying has so far been just great for this little fix of drone footage in between. There's other stuff. There's tablet holders, for example, like in order to attach something else than your smartphone to that remote control, you might have a little tablet or something that gives you a bigger screen to work with. There are hoods for tablets. I've seen antenna, what are they called? The little parabolic things you can put behind the antenna to improve the signal strength to get more distance. Again, not really something that I would use here in Germany because I need to fly line of sight anyway. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of accessories and pretty interesting market there. Now, in conclusion, I really like my new toy. I think it's a fun thing to play with. Again, I do not have a business case for it. I just wanted one, and wanted one for longest time, and now with a Mavic Air, the right feature set came around the corner. I'm amazed at how good the footage out of such a tiny camera can be. It is really a fun thing, and it looks really good, especially at 4K. The resolution is amazing, and if you see it and stabilized with the gimbal is a must if you want to use the video in any serious fashion. I like how tiny and foldable those current drones are, and talking about the Mavic Pro and the Mavic Air. That stuff is great to always have with you in your backpack, just in case you get to a place where you might acquire some aerial footage. Of course, always in your backpack, your camera should also be always in your backpack. So you now have like two cameras in your backpack. But also, and I think that's really important, don't underestimate the responsibility that you have when flying one of these. If it falls out of the sky for whatever reason, it can cause some serious damage to property or to people. It's also, initially, it was a bit intimidating to fly something that's kind of worth almost $1,000 and try to not step on any toes. And last but not least, there's one factor that I underestimated a bit. Where do I fly the drone? You know, typically somewhere out in nature. And I can fly it here over the house, but I can't even fly it over other people's houses without getting out of line with the law here in Germany. So I have to kind of go out to nature. Now, what is my relationship to nature? You know, with all the hiking and in Himalayan locations and stuff, that's all very special to me. And nature is definitely more on the sacred side for me. And drones can disturb, you know, they can be annoying, especially if someone else is flying them. If you're not flying them yourself and someone else. I know people who get really annoyed by them. And especially if they are on the smaller side that have like a more high-pitched sound that reminds you more of like a swarm of angry wasps. As an example, many ships in the Arctic are part of an organization that forbids flying drones because of a very serious reason. They might change the behavior of the Arctic animals, of the Arctic wildlife. Imagine flying near a polar bear. Like, you can't really go close to a polar bear because, hey, it might kill you, but you could fly your drone over a polar bear and you might end up making it run away. Animals up there live on a very tight energy budget. It's cold. They have to survive. So making a polar bear run away might make it expend valuable energy that it later won't have to hunt and then to survive. So these things are not as far-fetched as they might sound. And I really recommend taking those considerations into account when deciding where and when to fly. Now, by choosing the right place and time, you might be able to get around all that. But just keep in mind that that might be a factor for you that has the potential of taking away some of the fun when flying a drone. And that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thank you so much for being subscribed. And, well, thanks for just being yourself and for supporting the show. I have put a couple of links in the show notes. Those are Amazon affiliate links. If you want to spend some money. Again, this was not a sponsored episode. But if you choose to buy anything, I'd be happy if you click the link in the show notes and use those, because I will get a small kickback from that. Also, don't forget to send in your voicemails. Another Q&A episode coming up very soon. I think next week probably. And I'm collecting awesome questions, tips, tricks from all of you out there. And I love getting your voicemails. And you know the drill. Record something on your smartphone. Send to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. And I promise I'll make you sound good. Music for the show by Jeff Smith. Sound part and Hans Petter-Kagerud. Publishing and Slack challenges by Release Pixie Matt Refser Armstead. Slack invitations by Chief Invitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ. My name is Chris Marquardt. Go out and take amazing photos, no matter with your camera or with a drone. Be nice to each other. And happy shooting.